Our next speaker is Michael Grant, who is a doctoral student at Harvard School of Public Health, majoring in ergonomics and safety. His interests lie in workplace health and safety interventions, and he's worked at Boston Children's Hospital and the Harvard School of Public Health Center for Work, Health, and Well-Being. He has a BS in Environmental Science and an MS in Environmental Health, and he had his beard cut the other day with the red sock.
Thank you. So today I'm going to talk about developing a protocol for evaluating formaldehyde exposures in the research spaces at Boston Children's Hospital. And this is my disclosure slide. I have no relationships to disclose. So we'll start with a little bit of background and jump right into the protocol that we chose and sort of talk about each piece of it and then get into how we adapted that to our to our own situation over at Children's. And we piloted this process. We'll talk about some of the numbers we got there and finish up with some limitations and conclusions. So essentially what we're trying to do is translate sort of the traditional regulatory approach to exposure monitoring and move towards a more performance-based approach. It's something that we already do, but as such, or as it stands, there's not a very good structured format in place. And so this was a nice first attempt to get a framework in place that we can work with to really help intelligently target our resources as we move forward. And the idea here is to adapt an existing exposure monitoring practice, which is commonly used in industrial settings, to the research laboratory setting. And the reason why it's not really done in the research labs is because it's a very dynamic environment, so regular periodic exposure monitoring is virtually impossible in most cases. So this is the flow chart. It's adapted from the American Industrial Hygiene Association's flow chart that they use. We'll go through this in a little briefly now and a little more detail later. So starting at the top, you pick where you're going to start, which process you want to look at, what hazards you want to check out. We thought we'd start with formaldehyde. It's something that's used fairly widely across the research labs at Children's, and it's a particularly nasty chemical, as you guys, I'm sure, know. When you get to this basic characterization step, it's very straightforward. You want to find out everything there is to know about this, in our case, about formaldehyde. So where it is, who's using it, how they're using it, how often they're using it, et cetera. Then you move to your exposure assessment, where traditionally you'd form your similar exposure groups based on job title, and then you know, do some kind of sampling and some data analysis to see what your exposure likely looks like, and that will then lead you to your decision step, which you would make the decision whether it's acceptable, unacceptable, or an uncertain exposure, which all three of those decisions then have an appropriate follow-up action. Now, to get a little more detailed to each of those steps, for the basic characterization step, at Children's we have this great software. It's the CISPRO chemical inventory software. It's published by ChemSW. Basically, every bottle or container of chemical has its own barcode. That barcode is populated into an online database where it has all the information about who owns the chemical, what the chemical is, what kind of bottle it's in, concentration, volume, things like that. So that helps us really easily gather all of that information that we might need to know for that step of the process. Developing your similar exposure groups, as I said, traditionally you might do this based on job title in like a manufacturing industrial setting. This is really tough in a research lab because research labs have research assistants, maybe a postdoc, a PI. Those are not very informative as to what people's exposures might typically be. And so what we thought we would do is go ahead and form our exposure groups based on the type of procedure or the name of the procedure that was being used in the research labs. Because we did know going into this that there are at least a couple of procedures using formaldehyde, tissue fixations, animal perfusions that are performed fairly frequently and across many of the labs. And so we thought this might be a great way to start. So our method for doing this would be to send out a survey. We'd ask for the procedure name, the location where the procedure was being performed, whether it was in a fume hood, on a benchtop, or on a downdraft table. We'd also like to know information regarding concentration, volume, frequency, duration, all those good things. For our exposure assessment, we use passive badges. So you just clip it to the lapel for the duration of your procedure and send it off to the lab. They give you the concentration that the people were exposed to. And we were ideally looking for around 6 samples per exposure group. For statistical analysis, we just want to note here that we didn't adjust any of our concentrations to a time-weighted average. We thought this would be better because it would be a little more conservative with our estimates. And we used a program called IH Data Analyst. This is put out by Exposure Assessment Solutions Incorporated. We use the freeware version of it, and essentially what happens is you plug in your occupational exposure limit that you're concerned about, you put in the concentrations that you measured, and it gives you an output which tells you the probability that you exist in one of these five exposure control categories. These are also put out by the AIHA. They go from 0 to 4. 0 is good, 4 is bad, and it's based on the percentage of the occupational exposure limit that your true exposure category fits into. And the other great thing about this software is that it gives you a nice graphical output. So this is very easy for anybody to read, whether or not they're familiar with statistics at all, as long as you explain to them that your categories are on the x-axis and your probabilities are on the y-axis. So you can see, for example, here, this column here, column 2, we can see there's an 83.8% chance that our true exposure profile lies in category 2. We got 11.6% probability that is in category 1, and so forth. So for our decision step, this is where it gets a little tricky. There aren't very many guidelines out there that tells you what an acceptable exposure might be. Obviously, under any occupational exposure limits is great, but we decided to take this internally. There's a group of EH&S staff that gets together semi-regularly. It's the exposure assessment group, and they talk about things that problems they're running into professionally, or just generic problem-solving skills and all of those things. So we got together, we talked about this, we decided, at least for the pilot part of this, we'd like to test whether 75% in these three categories here, we would consider that an acceptable exposure, given that less than 10% did not show up in category 4. If that was the case, we would consider that an unacceptable exposure. If for some reason we didn't get a clear signal either way, we would call that an uncertain exposure. So then, just to bring you back to the decision and act follow-up actions, if a particular procedure was determined to be an acceptable exposure, then there's reassessment only with a significant process change. If it was unacceptable, it triggers a work task exposure evaluation, which is an in-house form that is used that really gets in-depth into the process to try to identify areas of your procedure where the exposure might be happening, and then some subsequent follow-up steps to mitigate any risks that were found. And an uncertain exposure would then trigger an annual exposure monitoring event to make sure that you don't venture into that unacceptable range. So we piloted this in two parts. For the first part, we looked into our CISPRO software, and we identified that there were 121 PIs at Children's that had formaldehyde in their inventories. We sent out the survey to them. We got 47 responses, which is 39%, which is not ideal, but it's a start. From those responses, we were able to come up with 22 similar exposure groups, and those were mainly based on type of procedure, the location, and concentration being used. After grouping by that, volume, duration, and frequency didn't vary very much. And instead of going ahead and devoting resources to sampling all those groups and doing all the analysis there, we were very lucky to have historical data that was collected between 2003 and 2012. So we decided to pilot sort of the second part of the flow chart with that data. So again, with the exposure assessment team as sort of the oversight for this, we created exposure groups based on the data that we had. We ran the analyses on each exposure group and then evaluated that decision step, so whether or not the 75% and 10% cutoffs actually made sense. And after going through each exposure group that had at least six samples that we could look at, we decided that those that were considered acceptable exposures by our metrics were indeed acceptable, and those that were considered unacceptable by this method were indeed unacceptable. And there wasn't many that were undetermined. Some of the ones that came up as an unknown, not acceptable or unacceptable, they either didn't have enough samples or were very infrequently performed, so we just didn't have that data at the moment. So overall, we decided this was an appropriate way to proceed and that it might help us identify problematic procedures and or tasks within such procedures moving forward. Some limitations that we identified throughout this process is that we're not unsure if we're capturing the variability across labs. This brings in that human element that a few of our other speakers talked about. It's by taking samples from different labs that are performing these procedures, we're unsure, even within the same lab, how two people might be performing the procedure. It could alter their exposures. In terms of sustainability, this is a little bit work intensive in the beginning, identifying all the people, getting the surveys out, getting people to respond, et cetera. So it's always a concern there. Comprehensiveness, with only getting back a small percentage of our surveys, calls into question that, and then the frequency with which we'd like to redo this process. So to keep it in the sort of traditional continuous improvement mindset, you'd like to do this semi-regularly to make sure that you're capturing people who maybe their grants are turning over, maybe you have a new PI, maybe somebody left, something like that. And then, as we've also heard a little bit about earlier today, there's always that organizational and administrative challenge of implementing anything new, especially in a larger organization. But given all that, we feel that this was a pretty successful first pass at doing this, and that when we checked out each of these steps, that the pilot seemed to make sense, both administratively and practically within the EHS structure. And hopefully, you know, moving forward, this will exceed the regulatory expectations and set some precedents for a more proactive, performance-based exposure monitoring approach to research laboratories. And as I mentioned before, it'll help us really intelligently target where we want to devote our resources to mitigating risk in either full-on procedures, or if it becomes an unacceptable exposure, maybe there's a specific task within a procedure that is proving more hazardous than the procedure as a whole. So going forward, we'll finish up some of the sampling and analysis for our newly established exposure groups. And we'll start with the ones that have less effective engineering controls as well as higher concentrations, just so we can get a little more bang for our buck. And we'll follow up with the Director of Research Operations. We think that this will be very helpful identifying areas of improvement, especially with that variability within and between labs, because they work very closely with a lot of our researchers. And once formaldehyde is finished, we'd like to take this process and move on to other chemicals that are of concern at Children's. So just like to acknowledge everybody over at the EHS office at Children's that really helped out to make this project possible. Thanks for listening.